The Holy Gospel according to Mark, the 12th chapter. As Jesus taught, he said, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and to have the best seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets. For they devour widows' houses and for the sake of appearance say long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation." Jesus sat down opposite the treasury and watched the crowd putting money into the treasury. Many rich people put in large sums. A poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which were worth about a penny. Then Jesus called his disciples and said to them, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the treasury, for all of them have contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she has had, and all she has had to live on." The Gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. Well, there's probably no other story that is more associated with stewardship than this one. Traditionally referred to as the widow's mite or the widow's offering, this story has been used by pastors and priests over centuries to say, "Look at this widow. See what she gave out of her poverty. If she can do it, so can you. Be faithful just as this woman and give to the church." I once saw this pastor who had everyone do an imagination exercise in worship. "Imagine that you are the widow," he would say. And then he invited everyone to fill out pledge cards and to come forward as the widows and invited them to drop their cards in these metal box kinds of things that I suppose kind of were supposed to remind people of the ancient treasury boxes in ancient Israel. But it was super weird and super awkward. And for a lot of us, this story, I think, brings up memories of where churches and pastors a lot of the time awkwardly try to talk about money without talking about money. Whether we imagine ourselves as the widow or feel guilty as we believe we are not giving all that we have like the widow, this gospel story has been used in the past, I think, to bring about a lot of anxiety. And it's too bad, because the story has turned into kind of a cheap stewardship guilt complex campaign theme. And it's too bad, because I don't think that it's really actually a story at all about we just got to give more. I think Jesus is trying to point to something much more important. For those of you who have met my dad, Steve, you'll probably agree with me that he is really a good numbers guy, unlike your pastor. It's through numbers that he found one of the great passions in his life, and that's computer programming. But what has happened actually recently, especially these last few years, is that multiple people have asked my dad to be a trustee in their estates. Not only because he's a numbers guy, but also because my father is one of the most trustworthy and honest people that I know. And turns out he is really good at helping older members of my family get their estates and wills in order. And one such person is my great aunt Janet, whom he's been helping for a couple of years now, kind of get some things in order. And my great aunt Janet is over 90 years old, and she's an artist, and she's still painting in her assisted living facility. You can actually see quite a few of her paintings hanging in Abby's in my home. But a couple years ago, my dad started to notice something that was Janet's estate wasn't really growing all that much. You know, here, this stock market was growing, and he anticipated that her estate was going to grow along with it. However, it really wasn't. In fact, in some months, it was actually losing money when it shouldn't have. My dad looked into this and discovered some things. Nothing illegal was done per se, but Janet had recently invested with a broker who was from a company that I won't name, who advertised itself as, quote, giving seniors the investment strategies and way of life and retirement that they deserve. In reality, the fund that Janet was coaxed into investing through this company was poorly invested, poorly managed, and borderline scam-like, according to my father. This broker would charge huge fees for minor tasks and would constantly change and tweak Janet's portfolio, and there were huge fees for everything under the sun, and especially they would get you if you decided to pull out of the fund. These fees, in fact, were so high that they were eating up any kind of growth that Janet's estate was doing, and in some cases eating away at the principal that she was investing at age 90. It really angers me. I remember having a conversation with my dad. He said, when investment companies such as this one have a business model of cheating our seniors and loved ones, it's a disgrace. I certainly believe that if it weren't for my father, who knows where Janet's estate would be currently. My great aunt Janet's case, unfortunately, is probably not an isolated incident. Well, in many ways, the widow in our gospel story was in a very similar situation. You see, in ancient Israel, Palestine, what would happen when a husband would die is that the estate or the widow's livelihood would be passed to this group called the temple scribes. The temple scribes were the ones who wrote and copied laws as well as scripture texts. They were the ones who were the experts in knowing how to legally handle these estates. And this was written into Jewish law and Jewish custom as an act of protection for widows and for families. But as we know from ancient Roman records and from historians who wrote at this time period, this in reality was a vehicle of incredible corruption and deceit, driving many families and widows into poverty. Jesus said, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and be greeted with respect in the marketplaces, and to have the best seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets, where they devour widows' houses, and for the sake of appearance, say long prayers." Now, Jesus' words seem to make a little bit more sense. So in many ways, this story is actually not about how much the widow faithfully cares for the temple. Instead, it's actually about the absolute and utter failure of the temple to care for the widow. Jesus is calling out the incredible hypocrisy of a temple system that is propped up from taking advantage of the poor. So it's no wonder then that immediately after this story in the gospel, in our gospel today, Jesus leaves the temple, sits outside on the Mount of Olives, and in Mark chapter 13 gives us what is referred to as the little apocalypse speech in Mark, in which he boldly claims, "This system will fall." This system that is propped up on the backs of the poor will be no more. Now, I realize it's very easy for me to trash the whole ancient Jewish temple system and call it done, but that too, I think, is missing the point of this story. Maybe what Jesus is trying to get at is the real uncomfortable question of taking the log out of our own eye and asking, what system am I trying to prop up? I, as a white heterosexual male who is a pastor, represent and benefit from a social and religious system that was built up over generations and that has taken advantage of the poor and the destitute. In this last election, this last Tuesday, we saw a lot of events take place. Some events that I think help prop up a system of injustice and greed. For example, Abby and I own a house, a piece of property in Missoula with a home address. And if we did not own a house and we were living, say, in North Dakota on an Indian reservation where property addresses are not very common, then we would be barred from voting in this last election. And if we couldn't afford or were unable to borrow a vehicle to drive the 60 miles, yes, that is the average distance in an Indian reservation, to get to the nearest courthouse to obtain a temporary address in order to vote, we probably wouldn't. This was the case for many reservations across our country. They were not able to participate in a system that determines policy, which greatly, of course, impacts their lives for First Nation people. Education funding, permission to install oil wells and mines on sacred lands, healthcare access and hospitals, police, and a fair justice system. We live, knowingly or unknowingly, in a social and religious system that continues to shun and take advantage of the widow and the least of these. So what is Jesus saying here to us? What is Jesus saying here to the church? When I was living in London, I went to a community meeting very similar to our own Bonner Community Council meetings. With my volunteer supervisor, who was ironically named Father Nicholas, though he was skinny and not at all looked like a Father Nicholas. But Father Nicholas was a priest of St. Michael's Church in inner city London, and this community meeting was about planning for the then upcoming 2012 Olympics. And there was a debate on a plan that literally called for packing up the homeless people in vans and driving them outside of the city and dropping them off somewhere else. And everyone just seemed to be okay with this. Business owners, citizens, everyone that is, besides Father Nicholas. And Father Nicholas stood up and gave one of the most passionate rejections that I have ever seen of this plan, and the community voted this plan down, I think, because of it. And on our way back from this meeting, he was knowing that I was thinking about seminary at the time, and so Father Nicholas turned to me, and he said, "Remember that the church is the only organization in the world that has the power and the mandate to always be on the side of the poor. Period. If you are not ready to do this, then you need to find another job." This, then, gets me back to the question of stewardship. Is our stewardship here at OSLC focused on just propping up the church? Or is it focused on serving and seeking justice for the poor? It can be easy for even churches, I think, to live in social and religious structures that take advantage of the poor, right? To commute in for worship and not really know the community that the congregation is located in, or to hold a food drive but not to seek to address the larger problems of hunger, to see its building as, quote, for worship only, and close its doors to other partners who might need its space. We in the church, it turns out, can be pretty good at only doing what we are comfortable with and turning a blind eye to the rest. So we were talking in our Sunday morning Bible study. We're going to finish the Gospel of Mark next week, but we were talking a few weeks ago about this question of why did Jesus need to go back to Jerusalem? Why did he decide to do that? Because, you know, he knew that this would probably be a suicide mission, going back to Jerusalem. And he could have stayed out in the countryside of Galilee for years and probably continued to do miracles, continued to preach, continued to be a super celebrity. But because God was up to something bigger, Jesus needed to go to Jerusalem and confront the religious authorities. The same in looking at the widow giving her two pennies, I think, can be true of us. How can we see God working in a larger context in this world and in this church? So may this widow, then, be a vehicle and symbol for us in taking stock of what we try to prop up. May she represent a push to the margins where the church actually belongs, serving, modeling, walking side by side. And may she be a source of renewed hope that one day, with our help, the reign of Christ will come and all of God's children will know that they are loved and that they matter. Amen.